Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of the latest posts covering finance and property news. It's another Monday evening, first of the year, and Edwin is back for another rant, first of the year. How are you going, Edwin? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Martin. To you and all your critters there. Look, 2025, right? We're in 2025. I've been reading on social media posts and then hearing from people leaving Sydney, heading north to Queensland because they can't put up with the daddies in Sydney. And they're also going, there's other people, they're even writing articles about people going to the Northern Hemisphere, your part of the world. Yeah, but look, as all I can say to our followers and our viewers is, as Dusty and I and the gang here in the mountains, we're staying put, Martin. We're staying put. Yeah, it's better to be take control of your own life than let others dictate your life, and they more or less determine where you're gonna go, which is rather an interesting or a strange way of to live.
Yeah, well, I agree, actually, Edwin. You know, there are two observations. The first is that the old grass is always greener problem. You know, it always looks better over there than here. Well, it doesn't always follow that it is. Although, actually, interestingly, through my one-on-one conversations, I have had more conversations over the last year with people who are really questioning whether they can thrive and survive in Australia because of the changes that have happened in the last little while. Of course, the other point is that when you come to other parts of the world, you have to take account of the weather. And I would just say that we've had significant snowstorms over the last few days here. It's been quite cold and wet and pretty horrible. And of course, in the US, they've got big storms there, snowstorms there as well, thanks to the Arctic weather coming further south than normal. So, you know, you've got to take account of the weather, I guess, in Australia, and that's been quite warm, but I think it's a little bit easier now. But I would say that you've got to make your own furrow. You've got to make your own decisions rather than sort of looking over your shoulder all the time and wondering whether, in fact, life will be better somewhere else. That's a path that I think leads to negativity and disruption and all those things. Fact is, you've got to make hay while you can and grasp the nettle where you are locally.
100%, and you've got to basically fertilize the areas that you're going to be walking on or stepping on by, and I speak metaphorically, of course. You've got to dig deep and make it work for you. Running away from problems like what we've seen and over the last couple of weeks on social media, it's like everybody wants to run away from what's around the corner. And this is why we spoke last week and I said that for us, as I label each year, 2025 is the year to become ruthless with your time, ruthless with what you're doing, with who you're spending time with, what you're not doing. We've really got to be ruthless with our health. Health is the most expensive currency of the future, in my opinion, with a lot of people, family and friends that are just dropping left, right, and center with all sorts of illnesses. And I'm not so much older relatives. I'm talking about young nephews and nieces, and the immune systems are absolutely shot. And it's five. Call it whatever you want, 5, 10, 15 years of spending, in front of a smart device, not exercising, eating the wrong foods. I mean, so it's really what you make of it. Then we obviously go into the grand, bigger scale, bigger picture, and that is, working. And we're going to touch on a couple of the things today with regards to some of the posts, which obviously, it's all to do with property, it's all to do with the economy. But, at the end of the day, Martin, we've come to a realization, years back, that we can't dictate what the politicians are going to do to an extent. We don't even know whether they're making up, things themselves. The question is who's even pulling their strings? On the grander scale. So we can't push local governments. And I'm talking about on a personal level. I'm talking about on you and I, level, as individuals. But we can only determine what our future is going to look like by what we're doing and changing what we did before in order to get a better, a different outcome for the future. Look, my thing is, Martin, that unless you're sleeping literally or metaphorically sleeping with Albo, or the politicians, unless you're in bed with them, you're not going to get them to change whatever plan they've cooked up for themselves and for whoever's driving them, right? So we've got to think and do and act on what we can control.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I made a post a couple of days ago talking about the question of home prices and what might happen next year. And I, in that post, made a quick reference to Claire O'Neill's interview on the Hack radio station, where she said that she was, not doing anything to try and keep prices to come down. Good high prices were good, and probably higher prices were better. I actually got the her press people reached for me and said, "That's not what she said." And I said, "Okay." So they gave me a statement which I've actually put up on my website. So they said that she never said prices were going up or going down. So I simply said to my earlier show, "Well, here's what she said. You can make your own decision. I'll just leave it there." So it's interesting how there's a hypersensitivity in the political world relating to property prices. I thought that was quite interesting, and even a little YouTuber like me got a message from the politicians saying, "You can't say that."
But Martin, come on. Seriously, Martin, I've got to get out. I've got to reach over the screen and slap you. You know very well that a lot of the bigwigs in Parliament follow our show, and hence the reason why they either change policy or change tact or because we catch them out and they've got to hide. And look, I also know that there's a lot of others in the media that also follow and listen to what we say in there, because that you can hear it in the follow-up questions or the questions that they ask the politicians. But yeah, going back to, so we are movers and shakers, Martin. You may be small, but you have heard of King David, right? King da David and Goliath. You've heard of that story. Yeah, hey.
Well, I do think we do have a bit of an influence, and both at an individual level, but I think, well, you're right, politically. And in fact, I know that there are a number of politicians who to listen to our show. So hello to all of those who are in political land, and I hope you learned something today. It's interesting, you were talking about what people are thinking, and there was this article which essentially was talking about the unfair reality facing thousands of young Australians. This is according to the ABS analysis, looking at alternative countries, et cetera, et cetera. And that's just another example of data being used in a particular way. And I guess that's part of the problem, isn't it? Where do you actually get truth from? And very importantly, to what extent is the information that's being presented true and fair and right? Because I do think there are some things going on which you can interpret different ways. But there was this survey which was done. It's called the Annual Big Youth Survey by Year Three, an organization that offers careers advice. They found that young people are delaying moving out of the family home. Some of them are saying they'll never own a home. Some of them are saying that, well, they hope to, but it's going to be difficult. It's interesting that 36% believe they will rent for life, up from a quarter in 2023. So, who do you believe? Well, it goes back to what I said just now. Sure, you can have these sort of highfalutin views, but the fact is, it's down to the decisions that you as individuals make. And our followers are actually a bit more sassy than many, and have made better decisions, hopefully because they've listened to us and have actually embraced what's going on, rather than just reacting to the high-level, highfalutin data that really probably doesn't tell you that much.
Yeah, like you said earlier on, Martin, you've got the many that believe that the grass is greener on the other side, and they'll they'll jump from one paddock to the other, not realizing that that other paddock you're going to end up with just as many, if not more, bulls and cows chomping away at the grass that you thought was greener that you were going to be munching on and going to enjoy. So you've got people, according to that article, you've got people going over to Japan, and because Japan seems to be the flavor of the was the flavor of the last quarter to talk about because of the property prices and a lot of articles that came out as to the value of properties. But you've got to be prepared when you go there. You've got to be prepared for a number of things. First and foremost, it's not a clear pathway to PR or citizenship. There are many obstacles as well. And as per the just the Google snapshot there that you just put up on the screen. Secondly, people, the so-called people, young people that they talk about that they can't afford a home or a property here. You'd think that you'd get a better understanding on who they are. If you drill down in better questions, I mean, were you looking at buying a house in the inner west here of Sydney? Let's say Sydney. Were you looking at buying a house? Were you looking at buying an apartment? Have you considered living in the southwest region? Have you considered living in the in the northwest region in a humble abode such as a townhouse or a villa? Have you considered perhaps going, not necessarily going all the way up the mountains, but halfway, the mountains or your outskirts of the Sydney region in order to get something that you can that you can afford. But everybody seems to be fixated on the medium entry level point or deposit that they have to raise, which is close to $300,000 in order to get into a property in Sydney. But hey, that's the medium. That's the medium range. That's the not everybody's is looking for those. But so I think, and we're going to expand a little bit further with another article that we're going to talk about later on, which is it all comes back to what we said in the last couple of episodes of last year, which is the posts and what people are get sucked into. Following one source of data that gives you an emotional that's going to give you the greatest emotional response because of quite frankly because of bullshit that's on that post, and secondly the person or the individuals that post it that then look at the actual post in greater detail and look through the BS that whoever posted it up on Reddit or something talks about, and yet they profess to be experts in the field of property or finance or anything related to property, and they put out misinformation. Why? Because they themselves, unfortunately, are after likes, retweets, and whatever else they think. It's an emotional fix. But hey, they end up with followers. They end up with people that listen to every word or every post they put up. And unfortunately, as we said in over the last couple of rants for 2024, said be careful in 2025 because don't just look at one data point. Look at various data points in order to obtain your information. We agree. We agree of the fact that most of the decisions, not all, but quite a large portion of the decisions that people make in buying and selling are emotional. They're not based on logic. They're based on a lot of it's based on emotion. And that's been one of the hardest things working and operating in the real estate industry for over 28 years is dealing with people's emotions from a seller's point of view, from a buyer's point of view, from a renter's point of view, from a landlord's point of view. But once you can sift through all that emotion and you can get to the nuts and bolts, and help people to understand the logic and the strategies and also the legislation, things navigate a little bit better. But unfortunately, That's yeah, the majority of the people will always follow the that emotional side, and that's why they come say, and that's why they get on planes and go over to Japan and then freeze their little asses off because they're the weather there is cold as well, and then they realize that they're literally living, yeah, it's the great big homes, but they require a hell of a lot of work and labor isn't cheap there, or they say, oh, I'm going to go to Italy and I'm going to go and live in Europe and going to go and eat lots of pizza and lasagna and so forth, but they don't realize that Italy, Paris, Spain, I've got friends and relatives across there, and some of them have been waiting anywhere between 12 months and 18 months to get bloody washers changed in the taps. If you think we've got issues here with tradespeople, you should hear about the issues that they've got over in some of these European countries, because nobody wants to do the job, especially in the towns that are so-called cheap to go for young people to go and live in. So you've got all these obstacles. So for now anyway, Martin, for us, as I said earlier on, for myself and the gang here, we're staying put because better the devil you know than the one that you're going to find out if you travel abroad.
Yeah, very good point. And just to underscore the other point that we come back to quite regularly, and I think it's worth stating at the start of this year that you can't just take the high level stories that people weave about what's going on. You have to go granular. You have to look at things locally. I made a show yesterday, which was called "Where Property Is Falling and Rising and Why." And what was quite interesting about that was that there were areas, in pretty much every market where prices are actually up relative to a year ago. There are other areas where prices are down. But when you actually start teasing out which areas are higher, which areas are lower, you start to see some quite interesting trends. And what I think is quite fascinating, and you and I keep talking about this, you really need to look at it down at the ground level. You need to understand what's going on, dynamically, locally. And these high-level stories that people trot out about property markets did this or didn't do that don't necessarily tell you the whole story. There was this one here which was talking about the pricier suburbs feeling the pinch, whereas some others are actually doing quite a lot better. So it gives you, the ups and downs, as it were. But I think you need to go even beyond the this sort of analysis that we showed there. You need to understand in the local area what the dynamics are, which types of property are there, and what's happening on the ground. And even at these sort of uncertain times, if you make good decisions, they're still good decisions, whatever's happening from the outside in. So to my mind, it underscores that everything that we've said on this channel for quite some time, that you really must not be misled by those high-level stories that are out there. You need to actually do the work on the ground.
100%, Martin, and even our old mate Tom is now preaching that what we've been saying for many years, and what we've shared with our followers for many years, and that is that Sydney is, has multiple markets, and there are markets within those markets. And I heard him in one of his posts last week even say what I've been saying for a very long time. And that is that, there are markets even in a block of houses, a street block, because you could cross the road and you could be $50,000, $100,000 apart, and it could be the same house built by the same developer 20, 30 years ago, the same building company, same land mass, same land area envelope, and you could be 10, 50, sorry, you could be $50,000 to $100,000 apart, and you got to ask yourself the question, why? How? Because it's about now more than ever. We've come into this era if you recall, when we used to talk about in 2019, we used to talk about. You asked me a question in one of the live rants. What was the intrigue? If an older house had any value at all, and I used to say back then, and I continue to say that there is an intrinsic value to every property, even more so now, regardless of whether it's a shack, because with a lot of changes, a lot of LGA, a lot of instruments that change, that the LGA changes in order for you to build. For example, you've got there's a property in North Epping that we're we're assisting some people with, and they're talking about at one stage they're talking about knocking it down and building something new. But these are people that don't understand. They just bought because sort of they come from the eastern suburbs and bought in. Not that that really matters. I just thought I'd throw that in. But the thing is that they're not understanding the what goes on, and because it's so close to the to Lane Cove River Park, to the bush, I said to them, I said, look, have you considered the fact that if you do knock it down, you won't be able to get the same envelope, the same footprint that you currently have, because the instruments have changed since this house was built. And I explained to them the situation of what would happen. And many found that out, if you recall, in the fires from about 6, 7 years ago, the bushfires, when the insurance companies were compensating the people that that there was Ash Wednesday and the one closer to now than that in the mountains. I think it was in 2017, where a lot of homes were lost. And they were being compensated at, from memory, anywhere between 350,000 and 450,000 to basically build a new home. And then they found out that one, what they could build with that was two-thirds of the home. And secondly, and even if they were able to build, or the equivalent to building the two-thirds of the home, was that there'd be so many more regulations. With regards to setbacks, with regards to bushfire ordinances, with regards to, because as I said, the local area instruments have changed dramatically over the last 15 years in many areas. So you've got those, you've got those issues to contend with. So this is where, so moving into 2025, Martin, is something that people are going to have to not rely on one source or two or three, but rely on a big handful of sources in order to ascertain, especially if it's the first time of trying to buy something, because navigating through the hurdles and impediments that are before the literally first home buyers, or even second time home buyers or third time home buyers, and not understanding what goes on, and the costs of making a mistake is just getting bigger and bigger. So it's a crazy world. And as I said before, the soon we'll have that chat with regards to how the industry is hell-bent on phasing out price discovery. In other words, making it very, very hard for new buyers to get. I mean, it's hard enough as it is with prices withheld, and it's going to even get harder moving forward. And it's for, and as I said from before, things are getting a lot more complicated and a lot more costlier. And things are only, in my view, are going to escalate in 2025 in the Sydney region.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, certainly it's harder and harder to get good information. The property portals are more and more obfuscating. We've discussed some of the reasons why in recent times. Especially now, I think it's quite an important time for people to sort of just stand back and reflect on what information is available and how valuable is that information. We've got, of course, this sort of high-level story: house prices fell for the first time in nearly 2 years, 0.1% drop on average across the country from CoreLogic. But of course, big variations. So Melbourne was considerably down, Sydney, Hobart, Canberra, Darwin, whereas Darwin, Brisbane, Adelaide, and Perth up. And it's interesting that the discussion clearly was about, things are actually looking a little bit shaky. Listings are rising. So Tim Lawless from CoreLogic said Sydney's downswing could match Melbourne's in the coming months as listings rise. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
Forgive
yeah.
me for
Well,
laughing. Forgive me for laughing, Martin.
yeah. Well, that just shows you. What really can you make of that? And then, of course, it goes on to talk about experts say falling house prices in Melbourne will favour buyers, particularly those who are upgrading, while a slowdown in price growth in other capitals could also offer buying opportunities. Last year, Perth's home values surged by 19.1, Adelaide's jumped 13.1, Brisbane's climbed by 11.2, Sydney ended 2024 with a 2.3% lift in values, while Melbourne declined by 3%, and Hobart and Canberra fell by 0.6 and 0.4. And I guess my point there is, Edwin, those averages mask everything, right? So I can point to properties in every market that have gone up and other properties that have gone down over the last 12 months. Even in Melbourne, there are areas where prices are higher. So, you know, these high-level statements really don't add very much at all. And then they go on to talk about things like, well, you know, the property values have slumped into the finishing line, affordability constraints and reduced borrowing capacity pushed buyer demand towards lower-priced homes. That pushed up home values in the lower quartile of the market. Meanwhile, rental conditions have eased. And I thought the most takeaway point from Lawless was this: all sides of politics are probably going to be bending over backwards to demonstrate a platform aimed at delivering more housing supply. So yeah, he's right on the politics. I'm not sure that we can draw much more from that. And then, of course, if you look at what property experts are saying, there is various views, but most of those people are talking about small rises, maybe, but a lot of uncertainty as well. So I just think that we should move away from all of this high-level analysis that really doesn't mean much, and, you know, really look at it on the ground. That's a much more effective way of trying to make good decisions. And like I say, I can point to areas where prices are still, you know, high, but still reasonable. There are other areas where prices are silly. And we know that there are some areas where demand is quite strong. We know that there are other areas where demand is quite a lot weaker. We will see changes in listings in the next few weeks as the you know, the autumn sort of phase comes in. But again, it comes back to the fundamentals. Even when you're thinking about buying a property, you are buying a single property. So, you know, all of these high level sort of themes that come over the top don't really help much when you actually are coming to making a decision about a particular property in a particular location at a particular point in time.
Yeah, look, 100%, Martin. That's something that people have really got to get their heads around. And this is where look, social media plays a big part in the way that information is gathered and then dispersed. And of course, the main publications, the legacy media, have to also, and reporters have to earn the crust, right, by maintaining a high level of click rate. And because obviously, if they don't get that, then you're not going to get your sponsors sponsoring, you know, whatever pages they put out, whatever stories they put out. It's interesting. I mean, this is this is as good a time as ever. If you want to put up those snapshots, those three snapshots that I sent to you with regards to just some of the trends. What happened with some of the areas, the snapshots of 2024, and I'll put out the that question. Yeah, are we going to see similar trends in 2025 in some of these areas? So although these aren't specific properties, these are just trends for certain suburbs. And our viewers can see, you know, you've got your Blacktown up 5%, your Liverpool up 7%, Beecroft up 4.5%, Stanmore 6.5%, you know, Maroubra 5%, then Kings Langley 5%, Strathfield South 4%. If you look at Strathfield itself, it actually was only about 0.7 or 1% for Strathfield itself, the growth in 2024. Cabramatta 15%. Then you go to St Mary's, 14%. Kings Park, 14.1%. DY, 14.8%. And South Penrith, 11.3%. So, I mean, and we even go a lot more granular than this. When we look at properties for clients, and when you and I talk about it, and obviously when you do your one-on-ones with those that come to you for that snapshots of the areas that they're buying into, and this is just literally poops all over those legacy articles, media articles that talk about, oh yeah, property's dropped, and in really fine print, oh, but Sydney didn't, and this didn't, and that didn't, and yeah, whatever, whatever, whatever. Because yeah, it's if you look at it's like sound waves, right? It's all waves. You look at depending on whether the wave is rising will determine what article goes out, regardless of the fact, Martin, that the person that writes this article as the wave goes up writes an article for the same publication when it's down, totally totally dispelling, totally contradicting what he or she just wrote a few days ago, if not a week ago. But yeah, they still got the avatar on on the Australian Financial Review and call themselves property editors, property gurus. They've got these fancy shit on their Twitter the whatever shows up first on X or on Twitter, expert at this and that, and zoologist, psychologist, whatever, whatever, whatever. But at the end of the day, hey, you just gave me an article. I mean, I'll tell you what, Martin. I'll tell you what. I mean, I'm just sort of outliving here a little bit, and you know how funny these articles are to me? They're just as funny as the Tom Panos weekly indexes when he does his auctions, because it's all bullshit and it's all emotion. I mean, there is a little bit of truth. I should there is a
It's a
little bit of
kernel of
truth. I
truth,
must.
yeah.
Yeah. But when you put it all together, so why don't we get his rants on the Tom Panos thing? Why don't we get his rants when or if you recall his rants when there was 2 out of 10, oh shit, 2 out of 10, the world is falling down, blah blah blah, this and that, and the same. I mean, and then next week it's 9 out of 12. I say, yeah, hold on a minute, hold on a minute, hold on a minute, hold your horses. Banking policy. Government policy, economic circumstances, construction, LGA instruments. It all changed within that week, so as you can come up with a different rant the following week. It's all bullshit, mate. Seriously, people have just got to wake up. You got to be ruthless. You got to be ruthless. Yeah. Hey, if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong. You got my Twitter handle. DM me, tell me I'm wrong, and let's have a talk about it. But then just and you look at the other thing that you notice on with a lot of these comical characters, and I say comical because they're good. Look, they're good people. As people, they're great people, great individuals. You can have a chat with them. It's just a love-hate relationship over what we stand for on as commentators. I guess it's a friendly banter, but and I take it as a comical comedy relief, because it's stressful enough as it is dealing with all the BS with the government that's putting on us at the moment, and running a small business and doing this and doing that. But yeah, you need this comedy relief from time to time, mate, and that's how I take it. I don't dispel everything that they say. I do listen, and I do pay attention not to not what what others say on certain posts, because they don't reply to a post that they put up, right? That's another interesting thing that I've noticing. But it's what others reply on the post that I pay a lot more closer attention to. Because such as the post that he did recently last week, the first Saturday of open houses for 2025, and it was interesting how they said if anybody's doing open houses, if anybody did any open houses work through this, the first week of first Saturday of 2025, just let me know how you went, and it was rather interesting. I actually took some notes, so there was. One real estate group. I don't know who they this was given to me, and this was in Brisbane, by the way. They had nine open homes in Brisbane, and to those nine open homes, they got across the board 73 groups of people. So an average of about eight groups, 8 or 9 groups of people through through each open house. In Baulkham Hills, one real estate agent had 33 groups of people through his open house. This is last Saturday. This is the quietest Saturday in many years. And there was one real estate agent that reported that he had one open house in Lane Cove, which he got 19, and East Ryde at 22. These are groups of people. And there was one agent that had an open house in Camden, and he got 13 groups of people through. So that to me is a little bit more interesting than a BS rant about how many people sold their properties whilst he was conducting the auction.
Yeah, well, it's a matter of perspective, isn't it? And I think the key takeaway from all this is, make sure you get multiple triangulation points to try and actually get a sense of what's going on. And that's the most critical part. And as you say, some of the social media stuff and some of the articles written, they'll change tack as quickly as the weather changes. And so, just watch that too. But interestingly, there are a few indicators which are worth, I think, thinking about too. So one that I think is worth coming to directly is migration. So, the interesting article here that unis expect near record foreign student numbers despite policy chaos. So despite all of this talk about migration falling, et cetera, the truth seems to be that we're going to find a lot of students coming into the country over the next 12 months. You've got to say it's unlikely they're really going to turn migration down.
No, look, and hold on. There's a show. I think it's called. I think it's on this channel. I don't know if you know the channel, Martin, but the channel. I think it's called Run the World or Walk the World. This guy that used to live in Australia and then they've gone over to bloody cold as England and sometimes comes under DFA. Shit, I think there's a show on a Monday night where they discussed this. I think it was 18 months ago. Come to think of it. See, this is the whole thing of information, right? This is the whole thing where people have got to be awake to information. All of a sudden, what this is this is news. This was published on the January the 5th, 2025 at 5:57 p.m. was when the screenshot was done. I mean, this is how far behind the legacy media and most of the people that don't follow the show are, Martin. And this is what we've said. We've been saying for a very long time now because of our insights into the and Dusty's connections with the migration lawyers, barristers, and law firms. Because she's done a fair bit of work there in the past, and we bring this out. We said that that Australia can't won't. Then, if you recall, didn't Dutton also about 2 or 3 months ago didn't back start backtracking on the immigration numbers as well, arming and ahhing as to how many they were or weren't going to cut. And as I keep on saying, it's just a just changing names and changing visa numbers and booyah, you got the same numbers if not more. But people have got to understand, which we spoke about before as well, which they've got to understand that my simple economics, not as versed as you are, Martin, but our pillars are mining. You've got mining, agriculture, tourism, and education. Mining's going down the gurgler because China is in a world of caca, and their manufacturing and construction and everything is only going to get slow. It's only going to slow down, and they're not going to be mining as much, and we're going to feel it a lot more, as the Which Our Charters have been telling us. We're going to feel it a lot more in 2026. So it's a 2025 is just really going to be a prelude to to what 2026 is really going to be all of that and how we're going to feel it. So if we're not going to get our or the government isn't going to get its taxes from mining in agriculture, obviously because of the tariffs that potentially could affect us, then we've got tourism and education. So what are the chances that they're going to cut down on education, Martin? There's two chances. One's called Buckley's and the other one's called none.
Yeah, spot on. Well, I do expect the mixture of migrants to change, but I think the students will be coming back in floods. And interestingly, the data that I'm seeing as well is that quite a few of those students are not just your average students. You know, they're coming with cash, they're coming with family support to effectively help them. In some cases, they're actually buying property as well. So, you know, all of those things are actually in the mix. But actually, one of the most critical things to talk about currently, I think, is the Aussie dollar. So the low road for the Aussie has real consequences for you, is the post that I made the other day. And there's a really important point here. So if you think about it, Australia is starting to look really, really cheap for those overseas because the dollar is so low. And by the way, firstly, the dollar's dive could delay RBA rate cuts. That's one of the things that I think people need to understand. It also, of course, changes the value of exports and imports and makes Australia cheap. So, you know, if you want to buy in Australia and you're overseas, then you're probably going to be actually able to get it in for cheaper than previously. And interestingly, petrol prices could also be hit, of course. So that's going to put more inflationary pressures. Rate cuts risk the dollar. And this one too, falling Aussie dollar could halt first rate cut. Interestingly, they're saying if it drops to 55 cents, then he might certainly see a change of tack. My point there is that there's a lot of externalities which also has an impact potentially on what's going on in Australia. And if you're thinking about locals competing with those from overseas who are also interested in buying, the change in the dollar potentially has a significant impact on the relative positioning of those in Australia relative to those with money overseas looking to bring it to Australia.
Martin, I know how much of it I can't remember how much of it I shared or what I shared last with regards to we've got the well, forget the WeChat, the overseas WeChat chatterers, forget them. We've been saying the Silent Tigers. It's 2025 is the year where the Silent Tigers are going to roar because there's a shitload of money coming. People don't understand how big that package that the those containers of rupees that are going to be coming over, whatever they have over in India. But yeah, there's a lot coming because people don't understand how their economic landscape has been changed as well with the inflow of people out outsourcing services, and sending it over to India. And India is the you only have to look at the population of India, and you have, then you extrapolate that to the upper middle class, to those that speculated on property there, and what that market has done, what that market has meant for them. So this is so I've been warning people from again Sydney market, Sydney region, and certain parts of the Sydney region, Sydney market that's going to get hugely affected. But who's to say how much how further that sprawl is going to be, because obviously they'll also be looking at no different to what the WeChat chatterers have been looking at for decades, and that is schools and commercial centers as well. So you've got all this coming in, and the other one of course is your again we reiterate on the new kids on the block. Some of the phenomenal stuff that I've been hearing from my Vietnamese contacts and friends, and that what's happening over there. They've got businesses there that are connected with government sources over there, and again, you look at the money that's coming in, and it's being parked in and around the a lot of people say, oh, yeah, it's all just going to lean and cover a matter. No, a lot of that money has been parked around Rod Point, Hunters Hill, Gladesville, in those areas there. So then you've got your the wealth that just sits across a small amount of ocean between the Northern Territory, Queensland, and you've got Indonesia. I mean, Indonesia is booming, and there is a lot of money. Working with the Indonesian, well, one of the Indonesian groups here that are very well connected with the embassy and the council that the group that look at Indonesian business owners here in Australia. It's absolutely gobsmacking what they think, but for the only reason that they don't believe that the smaller, like the lower range properties are of great value where they can make a lot of money. But for that reason, we wouldn't know ourselves, Martin, because that's our saving grace from the border with Indonesia. They're more into the 5 million, 10 million, 20 million, 30 million dollar property ranges. That's what they're buying, and they're buying new. This is the sort of money that these people have got. And again, you look at the number of people that sit in Indonesia, and you look at the percentage of people that basically control the wealth and the business people in Indonesia. You've got your Chinese Indonesians, you've got your those in all the political with political influence and government influence and local government influences and so forth. And there's a lot of money parked underneath mattresses as well because of the corruption. But it seems to still be very, very easy for a lot of that money to come into Australia. And it's not going really to Brisbane. It's not really going to Melbourne. Guess where it's going, Martin? It's heading, and most of it heads into the Sydney region, according to Domain, into the Sydney market. And this is why people have got to be very, very careful, and they've got to be astute and be ready to, in my opinion, from my research, and this is just me speaking. This isn't financial advice. This isn't other than from the as you said, the putting together, triangulating all the different points and all the different sources and all different commentary that we get, and the people that we talk to, obviously the real estate agents on the ground as well, we're able to assist our clients. But yeah, look, it's only going to get tougher with regards to the witcher chatterers. As I said, that's an interesting conversation there. Not much is going to happen, and a lot of people are probably saying, thank God, not much is going to happen because the Lunar New Year for them is on the 29th of this month. It's so close to the Christmas holidays, so a lot of the chatterers are basically calling it, a long holiday over January to celebrate end of year celebrations, and then you've got Lunar New Year, the Year of the Snake celebrations coming up. So there's not a lot of activity going to be happening to an extent. I'm not saying at all, but there's going to be a lot less from a local point of view. From a mainland China point of view, the interesting things that I've been getting from Dusty is the pullback in obviously in purchasing raw materials from us because of what's happening there over in China, to the point where the CCP, I mean, they are hamstrung. The economy is really they're trying to bring in policies to sustain. Property falls. I don't know how that's going to pan out. We'll get more information on that next week as to what they're going to try and do in order to try and level out the falls and contain those. But one thing for sure is that there's going to be less being purchased from us in terms of raw materials, which are, again, We go back to the earlier point, and that is whether it's the labor or whether it's the libs or the labs that take the baton, middle of 2025 or whenever they call the election, they're not going to cut back on immigration. Is our view, if it's going to be very little, it's going to be nominal. It's going to be token policies here and there, but it's really, as I said, what's the space as visas and visa numbers change so you can, because it's all smoke and mirrors. So from their point of view, from the WeChat chatters' point of view, it's all quiet as she goes for January.
Yeah, fair enough. And the year of the snake, I think, will be an interesting year for China. And of course, the consequences for Australia will be quite significant because China is our biggest trading partner by far. And, if you look at the MAIFO, which came out just before Christmas, there were some worrying signs there for their modelling, which would suggest that tax take will be down, debts will be higher. And it's all to do with a weak China. So we'll see how that plays out. Now, the other interesting factor when you think about what's going on is, of course, not all property markets in Australia are actually behaving the same way. As I said, in the West Coast, in Perth, and in Brisbane, quite strong. But Melbourne has been going through the ringer. And of course, there's more good news, bad news there, depending on how you look at it. But, there's now a 7.5% tax on short-term rentals, which will see holidays in Victoria becoming more expensive from January the 1st. So the question is, does it provide a solution against the current rental market crisis? Well, not sure about that, but just shows you that once again, there's more uncertainty in Melbourne and surrounding areas, and prices there are probably still under the gun.
Yeah, it's interesting listening to that report, and looking at some of the areas where the short-term rentals really sit. And you look at the people that they interviewed that are saying, "Oh yeah, I think properties are going to get more cheaper." So I think, yeah, okay, okay. Let's in terms of and but unfortunately, more than likely. On face value, I don't think the bank's going to look at what you want to pay for it as or the vendors are going to look at something that you're prepared to pay for it as an attractive offer. So you've got a lot of these touristy areas where a lot of these properties sit in and well-to-do areas where the property prices are very relatively high. So the question is if they do come on the market because of the pressure, who's going to buy them? Who's going to buy them outside of the locals? Secondly, I think from my understanding and reading between the lines from what one of the people that we're interviewing that's that's heading the that's dealing with the short-term rentals, they're heading short-term rentals or had something to do with it. I think people are going to be prepared to absorb the extra $20, $26 per night, because it's obviously going to be tacked on to the ongoing charges. What they weren't sure of was all the other charges and how they're going to be. So in other words, at the end of the day, Martin, it's basically the consumer is going to the one that's going to pay for it, right? And because one because of the high demand that a lot of the short-term rentals will still get because of the areas that the majority of them are located in. So that was rather interesting. I thought the next article, which I tagged and I put there, homes are becoming cheaper in Melbourne, but crime is becoming very expensive, was an interesting one because this is the social impact of the economic situation that we face. And obviously, I don't believe we're going to see. It's not going to get as bad. Hopefully, it's not going to get as bad in the Sydney area as it is in Melbourne. But this is one of your get out of Melbourne articles, and this is one of your get out of Melbourne reasons, or why people are going to be wanting to bail out of Melbourne when you have to contract your own private security because the local police force just can't cope with the gangs. I mean, this is crazy. This is next world, next next level down in terms of third world stuff, right?
It is absolutely, and it's interesting that when you have to hire private security to try and protect yourself, then you've got a big significant problem. And interestingly, there's a correlation between high levels of financial stress, mortgage stress, rental stress, and crime as well. So you see the hot spots, and if you do mapping between mortgage stress, as I do, and crime rates, there is unfortunately a nasty correlation. Not surprisingly, if you think about it, people are under pressure, and so things give. So that's not good. I guess the other point there is that what's going to happen to rentals in and around Victoria too? That's another question. We're seeing a number of property investors who are still trying to get out in Melbourne because they cannot make it work anymore. The higher tax that's now imposed, the fact that the rents are, well, they're not moving up as fast as they did. And even so, many people are, from an investment perspective, underwater. So, are there more rentals or less rentals available?
Look, from that's going to be interesting to see and watch moving forward, because the rental numbers as of this week have increased a bit from last week of last year, but again, it's not really substantive to make an impact. What we are seeing is that still the high numbers of the sales figures. It's interesting the point that Sam Trades is posted up there on with regards to what the that article from I think it's REIV or ABC News, and they interviewed the people from REIV down there. Didn't get a chance to read the article, but on face value, it's Victoria rentals fall by nearly 25,000 as investors sell off heat up. To me, it's the litmus test to what I've been saying for over 12 months now. Based on government policy changes and where people have been, keep on barking about negative gearing and getting, changing negative gearing rules and, the all sorts of arguments. But in the short term, I think we are seeing what the effect of government policy changes has on the investor market and how the renters, the tenants, end up paying for it, end up feeling the pinch. Whether it's going to be a 12-month, 18-month, 2-year, 24-month, 36-month tranche or pain, time will tell. And so this is my prediction for this is my prediction for Melbourne. I'm predicting that a lot of these new arrivals that are coming in from India, Pakistan, that those the South Asian regions, a lot of them are going to gravitate towards moving more towards your Melbournes because of the affordability, and because but obviously then you've got your jobs as well, but I still get the feeling that a lot are going to there's going to be a greater surge, a greater move to your Melbourne because of a lot of, as I said, a lot of these new migrants that don't want a stable home, don't want a stable roof over their over their head. So that could be the saving grace for the for those that are wanting to sell. I don't believe we're going to see a lot of changes to the investors wanting to get out because the pain that they're in and change for the better takes a long time and in a lot of cases, people investors are more than willing to drop the asking prices even if they end up losing a bit because at the end of the day, they've got to protect the principal place of residence. So if they've got no more toys to sell, that's eating up the budget, and there's a lot more money coming out of their pocket in order to maintain the investment properties down there that aren't getting the rentals or aren't getting the returns, or because of the government policies, it's costing them a fortune now to maintain. It's I think it's still a harder decision for them to put it back on the rental market than to keep it on the for sale. But again, it's early days, and it's only going to be till really the middle of February we're going to see how those listing numbers are fare as we report on them on a week-by-week basis.
Absolutely. Well, it'll be very interesting times ahead. We might just skip over now and talk a little bit about the listings, which are, early days yet. So, if you look at what's happened, here is the story in Sydney. So we've got 16,233 properties there. And your chart shows that relative to where we were last year.
Yeah, look, it's interesting, Martin. It's interesting how we're starting. I've changed the colours, by the way. Sorry to you. So I've tried to put it on. So blue is now 23. The red is the 24, and the grey is where we're starting off for the first week. Look, as I said, we're really not going to get a glimpse of how things are going to play out till really week 7, 8, and 9. That's when we're going to really start to see how things may potentially pan out for the Sydney numbers. But obviously, based on the what we saw, the rising numbers towards the end, to middle from middle to end of 2024, but it wasn't enough to quench the appetite of the demand that was out there across many of the Sydney's markets, and that's going to be interesting. There's again, I wanted to raise a point there here, which just came to mind is, a lot of the new money that's coming in, or the people from abroad that are going to be wanting to park the money from that don't hold PR. Don't forget, they're the ones that they can buy new or buy something that they're going to knock down and build, subdivide into two lots. So they can buy an existing property, but as long as they're going to basically knock it down and then subdivided into two, like a duplex scenario. So if they're all, but they can always buy new. So that is also another reason why it's welcoming for a lot of the from both sides of politics, because don't forget it's the stamp duty and all the other taxes and levies that are paid on the way through that keep the naughty habit in check. Yeah, so there's no other reason. So, but we'll see. We'll see. It's early days, Martin, for 2005.
Absolutely. Well, let's just touch on Melbourne and baseline there of 26,901 on the 6th. So we'll see how that travels. I guess the point here, Edwin, is that, as you say, early days, we'll see how it plays out. A lot of people are still on holiday. Interestingly, Brisbane is also down a little bit, as perhaps you'd expect at this time of year. Again, I don't read that as particularly relevant or important yet. And of course, the auctions are very, very low, as you'd expect. Interestingly, also the old rentals in the Sydney region, 14,117, and in Melbourne, 12,638. So there are some stakes in the ground. But the most amusing thing for me from all the things you sent me was this particular little one here, which is Ridiculosaurus, they called this. So wacky heritage listings put lures in spotlight. Road gutters, a horse trough, and toilet block are some of the most unusual sites to be granted heritage protection in New South Wales as local councils prepare to list dozens more, including Inner City Nightclub, a brutalist Northern Beaches office block, and the 1950s housing tower. Well, perhaps, Edwin, this is one way of stopping the high-rise redevelopment, right? If you can find a wacky heritage listings, maybe you can avoid it. What do you think?
Yeah, look, and then Victoria will adopt it as well, and include some sort of a tax and levy on it as well. So if you want to pee in the trough, then you got to pay extra for the privilege, and you get taxed on it depending on the volume that you pee. But look, Dusty tells me that Opal and Mascot Towers may make it in the into the next tranche of of heritage listed properties. So that's what she tells me. She could be on the
Very
money.
good. Well, anything is possible. I have to say that I was very amused at that. Well, we're running out of time, but before we go, just a quick health warning from Edwin with regard to service checks.
Yeah, look, I think it's early days, early time, early in the year, and I think it's prudent for people to do the routine service checks of the, call your electrician or reach out and I'll get you one, plumber, check on your plumbing, and more importantly around around this time of the year, obviously it's the bushfire season, and check your gutters and get somebody to check your gutters if you can't get up on your roof, and good time to start cleaning if you haven't already done it. In terms of look, service checks can save you a hell of a lot of time in the future, and also a hell of a lot of money by just getting a professional to go and check it. So, for example, with the bathroom, you may have some of the grout coming off in the from your tiles in your shower recess areas, your wet areas there, and all the silicone may have been peeled off. And by simply fixing that or repairing that early, you could save yourself a full bathroom renovation later on down the track. Obviously, get somebody to look at it that knows and understands. From the electrical point of view, I can't emphasize that more than ever, particularly with smoke alarms and the like. There was a few other things that I was going to send you that I didn't get a chance to get an electrician, get somebody that's professionally and adequate to check it. Look, I'd go as far as recommending to all our clients, and when we used to run the property management books, we used to highly recommend hardwired smoke detectors as opposed to the battery operated ones. There's I've said a lot on that in the past, but I think it's prudent for that 360, $400. It could save you a lot in the future. Service checks on the property. It's a good time to do it now whilst things are relatively quiet, before things heat up, because I think costs of repairs, maintenance, and construction, I don't see that they're coming down. If anything, they'll continue to increase.
I agree, and these stitch in time saving nine thoughts are very, very important because unfortunately the truth is that if you don't fix them when they're small issues, they can become big issues, and particularly the issue with gutters and getting them blocked, and then you have a rainstorm comes through and suddenly you find you've got water everywhere. I mean, those things can happen. It's pretty easy to get the gutters cleaned. But if you leave it, then significant issues later. And I'm echoing your views on smoke alarms too. But if you do have battery ones, it is important to make sure that the batteries are not too run down. And generally, I think the recommendation would be to swap them out once a year, or as you say, switch them over to mains powered. Of course, the thing with mains powered, then you need some sort of backup to the mains for the smoke alarms when the power goes down. So there's always swings and roundabouts with that. But anyway, I want to say thank you very much for the first round of the year. I think we covered a good range of subjects. You sent me more stuff than we covered, but I'm sure we'll be able to cover it in a future post as well. I look forward to that and hope you have a great week. And I'll look forward to catching up on next Monday's rant, which of course will be same time, same station. We'll see you then.
All the very best to you, Martin. Cheers.
Take care. Bye.